Elizabeth Baird is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. And she uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. We're staying pretty busy around here. Everyone's getting ready for pledge drive, so it's getting a little nuts around here, but it's the good kind of energy.
I kind of like pledge drive. I think I've said that before, that I enjoy hearing the stop downs and listening to my fellow coworkers kind of talk and share their stories, and I enjoy the interactiveness.
Wonderful.
Interactiveness of it.
Yeah. Well, what's going on?
So today is my sister's birthday.
Okay, happy birthday to her.
Yeah, happy birthday to Katie Weisenborn Vanancini. She is 9 years younger than me, and so I remember the day she was born. I was in third grade. I can remember what I was wearing. I can remember going to the office, and I was so excited because the secretary let me call my mom at El Camino Hospital, and I actually got to talk to her on the phone, which felt mysterious and magical that my mom just gave birth and she could actually speak on the phone. And my first and most important question was, did you have a boy or a girl? Because I so desperately wanted to have a sister. And when she said we had a girl, and her name is Catherine, and I was just overjoyed. And it's funny because that my friends who I was in school with in third grade still remember that day as well. That entrance of my sibling into the world was amazing. And then we've continued to be close all of our life. And it's interesting because we shared a room together 9 years apart. And so she, you know, had a top bunk and I had the bottom bunk. And I remember coming into my room when I was in high school, and she, I thought, had been asleep for a long time. And for whatever reason, I don't know if she was waiting for me every night or she woke up. But when I would get into bed, typical teenage kind of sassy, you know, person, probably had an argument with my parents or had some drama with friends. But I'd get into bed at night and always hear this little voice, "Are you there?" And she'd look over the top bunk at me and then start telling me stories, you know, at 6, 5, 6, 7 years old. And it's just the light of my life. And then she went to school in Santa Barbara, and that was wonderful because we were able to get really close while she was in college. And we've maintained this like really solid relationship all of our life. And so this weekend we had a family birthday party in Monterey because my dad's birthday is tomorrow and he's going to be 81. Go dad. So we had a family gathering, and it's funny in my family how things work. No one likes to miss any event. And so there wasn't really a formal birthday gathering in the works, but I heard through, you know, my daughter, "Hey, did you know that Katie's going down to Monterey this week?" And I said, "Really? I wonder what they're doing. I think they're having a birthday party." So I called my brother. He called me. And he said, "Hey, I'm driving up to Monterey." I said, "You are? Why?" "I think we're going to have a birthday dinner." "Really? That sounds great." So the next thing I know, I'm in the car with my husband. We all end up having this impromptu dinner. And it was a wonderful. I love impromptu events almost more than anything else because everyone just comes with this positive energy, excited to be there, happy we made it all work. And as the table laid out, it was the five of us, my mom, dad, and my brother, sister, and I, and then our spouses and our children kind of ended up at the end. And we didn't plan it, but in all honesty, we tend to kind of group in the five of us when we have family gatherings. And it was one of those nights where a lot of stories came up between the five of us, stories of our childhood, memories we had of trips, memories of growing up together. And I left that dinner feeling just full and whole and happy and connected. And not that it was a surprise, but just that reminder that my closest relationships, aside from my husband and my daughters, is with my siblings. My brother and sister are my best friends. And it's funny because if you had asked me when I was in high school, I would have never claimed my brother as one of my best friends. As a matter of fact, we had a very classic sibling rivalry relationship growing up. We're 18 months apart, and so there was a lot of competition. Our personalities were really different, and we battled. We battled royale. And it's one of the reasons that my sister's so much younger, because I think my mom really hesitated to wanting to have any more children because my brother and I fought so much. One of the stories that came up this weekend were how many times I was personally responsible for my brother going to the ER to have stitches when we were young. Not proud, but it was the way it was. And then, you know, as we grew up, I was very protective of my sister, and I thought my brother and his friends coming over were a bad influence. So there was just, it was contentious between my brother and I. And through high school, since we were so close in age, we tended to date within each other's social circle, which could be great or awful, but still we were kind of at odds with each other. And then we both ended up at UC Santa Barbara, and I was there, and then he followed me 2 years later. And at that point, everything changed, that we all of a sudden had this new relationship, that we were outside of the house where, you know, a lot of the sibling conflict or the sibling competition took place. We were in our own space, and we started to, you know, our social lives interacted. We dated each other's social groups, so that was fun and wonderful. But what really changed everything in my relationship with my brother was my senior year in college, and my two best friends were killed in a car accident. And understandably, that just ripped the rug right out from under me. And without saying anything or ever really having a conversation, all of a sudden my brother was there every minute of every day. From that point in February till I graduated in June, I don't remember a moment that he wasn't there in the morning, going to class with me, there at night, just hanging out, went to the funerals with me, just was there. And we never had a conversation. He never said, I need to do this. It just was. And after that experience, our relationship was bonded in a way that's unbreakable. And so leaving the dinner this weekend, I was just thinking, I couldn't imagine my life without my siblings, either one of them. And I started wondering about just like sibling relationships in general. And I teach a section on siblings in my family psychology class and talk about the research of Frank Soloway and how birth order impacts our temperament and, you know, how the fighting that we do when we're young kind of teaches us about how to navigate relationships as we get older. But I was really curious about how those relationships change and support our mental health as we age and get older. How do those relationships end up having profound impacts on our own mental health and well-being as we grow? And how important it is to nurture those relationships, because some of the research suggests, and it's that wasn't finite research, but some of the research suggests that almost a third to a half of siblings don't have good relationships. I'm saying that backwards, but, you know, only a half of siblings say that they enjoy their relationship with their siblings. The other half have a mixed bag of sometimes we get along to we're completely contentious and we don't even speak to each other. And I find that really fascinating because the research points out how important those relationships are to our physical and mental health, to our sense of well-being, you know, to how we live our lives and thrive as we get older. There was one research study that was done following 300 men over the course of their lifetime, starting in the 1930s, and they found a direct correlation to those men who had good relationships with their siblings and their mental health as they aged. And so I wonder if we don't bail out of relationships too easily. I wonder if we haven't set up a culture where if things aren't feeling good, we walk, or if things are too hard, we bail, or if we're not happy, we don't have to be there, or if things are a challenge and we feel upset, we just walk away. And although there are times when things are incredibly toxic or dangerous and you absolutely must walk away, I wonder if we don't walk away too often or shut doors too often with the thought that I can find a better relationship or there'll be someone who understands me more. I wonder if we shut the doors on our relationships with our siblings too quickly, and that's supported by unintended consequences of going to therapy, to therapists who encourage people who are in therapy to speak up for themselves, to be assertive, to don't back down. You know, if you read all of the tips about how to deal with challenging sibling relationships, the top three things they say is hold your ground, be assertive, walk away if it doesn't feel good to you. And in some ways, all of those things are kind of a setup for ending relationships, for not being able to find our way back. And so That's what I thought we would talk about today. What are our relationships with our siblings? How is your relationship with your siblings? And do you have any fun sibling stories? Because one of the best parts of the dinner this weekend, we're telling stories about things that we did growing up and things that we experienced. And the great thing about siblings is that you together have an experience of your parents and all of the strange experiences being children of your parents and whoever they are, and how we view it through different lenses because of our age or our birth order in our family. And so I'm going to be opening up the phone lines today, and I'd love to hear a favorite sibling story. And I'd also like to ask how your siblings have impacted your life. And if you're feeling bold and brave, I know that half of you struggle with those relationship with your siblings. And let's talk about that. Is it worth trying to nurture those relationships or bring them back? Or maybe it's time to really just walk away. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can be part of the conversation by joining us at 805-781-3875. You can find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@TheReluctantTherapist.com. And as always, you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Tyler is great about getting those shows posted right away so you can listen. Or if you'd like, you can podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or however you download a podcast. Look for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Hit subscribe and the shows will be uploaded to your device. You can listen at your convenience. If you leave a review, it helps other people find the show. So we'd like to join more people into our community and grow our listeners as always. So I'm looking forward to seeing where this conversation takes us today. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. I love this song by the Rolling Stones, Dance Little Sister, because one of my fondest memories of my sister, Katie, who's celebrating a birthday today, we called her the little screaming yellow zonker. She had this one-piece zip-up jammies. You can picture those, right, with the feet in them, bright yellow. And she would wear those and, you know, wander around, just break out into dance all the time. And she had a little record player that she kept up in her bed, one of those, you know, play school record players, and she would play their little songs and sing her heart out and do her dances. And it feels like yesterday, and yet here we are 49 years later celebrating. And so I'm curious to know what your relationships are like with your siblings. Do you have a relationship? What is a sibling story that you have you might be willing to share? And how have your siblings impacted your life? Interestingly, 80% of the population has a sibling. And today, kids born today are more likely to grow up with a sibling than a father, which is a whole nother show unto itself. Our siblings impact our life in different ways, from how we navigate our relationships to how we feel about our own self-esteem to how we get along with others. And it's also interesting that they are our closest blood relationships. And in some ways, our siblings are more different than even people we've met for 15 minutes. Our genetics make a difference. The family environment that we grow in up in makes a difference. Our temperament as individuals make a difference. The birth order, our gender, and the external environmental factors all influence how we get along as siblings. But one of the biggest factors is how we view our position in the family system. When we come into the family system, most siblings feel like they got the raw deal. Every sibling believes that their parents liked someone else better. Parents do have favorites, and that's a whole other story as well. And hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about how we can parent in ways that will reduce sibling rivalry or also increase relationships as children age. But that factor of what is happening in that family system when we're born really impacts how we all get along. If your parents' marriage is going well and they're excited and things are comfortable, that new member of the family seems to be taken in easily. But if a sibling comes along when the family's struggling financially or the parents' relationship is struggling, that can set up conflict within the siblings right away. And each sibling, and this is kind of evolutionary and biologically, every sibling comes in competing for parental attention, you know, because in order to get parental resources, that thrive mechanism means that we need to make sure our parents are paying attention to us. And so if one sibling is the smart one, or one sibling's the cute one, or one's the athletic one, siblings will come in to the family system and generally find another niche that they fit into, whether it's taking on the role of being an athlete or taking on the role of being the smart one, or if all of those roles seem to be taken, then people will tend to go the other direction and maybe just give up and be the rebel. So what do you think about that? 805-781-3875. Hey, Tori, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I'm the oldest of three. I have a younger brother and a younger sister. And when we were growing up, my parents went through a really horrible divorce, and all three of us completely agree that the divorce, while it was really hard, made the three of us bond together. And I'm now 36, and we are absolutely so close. Like, I know I can call my brother or sister for absolutely any reason whatsoever, and they will be there for me. And they are my best friends, and so I ended up having two kids because I wanted that for my kids. I wanted them to have that sibling bond because it is so, so special to me.
And how are your kids getting along? You know, have you noticed their connection?
Definitely, definitely. My son struggled a little bit. He was a little over three when my daughter was born. But my daughter adores my son, and she's just one of those really happy, joyful people, and it's hard not to love her back. And so we joke that my son was an old man when he was born, but my daughter, like, when they forget they don't like each other, they love to play with one another. So we have those ups and downs, but they absolutely love playing with one another, and I definitely see that bond forming.
So it must feel great to know that you've carried this relationship forward, and now the next generation will have that same experience.
Yeah, I really try and, find things that they can do together and encourage them to play together and find ways to compromise and have, you know, the older sibling kind of not always boss the younger one around and, you know, like, listen to her input and so that they can, you know, try to start seeing each other as equals, even though they're only 4 and 7 now, but so that they see each other not as a younger sister or an older brother, but as siblings and equals, so that relationship can evolve. That's my hope anyway.
I love the goal. And another side note too is to make sure that you encourage them each to have their own private space and their own private things, like their own special cabinet, their own special shelf, so that they don't always feel like they have to share, and to have their own activities that they don't have to share. That also kind of helps. Yeah.
They have their own rooms, and my son is really super into sports. And my daughter does ballet and gymnastics, and occasionally they've sort of tried out the other thing, but they definitely have a great separate life. And at the same time, we go to each other's events and support them, because we want to, because we're a family.
Yes, you are. Tori, thank you so much. I appreciate the call.
No problem. It was nice talking to you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Clark, you're on the air. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hi.
Hi.
By the way, you know, thank you for your show. It really makes my life better.
Oh, thank you.
Now, I recently repaired a relationship with my older sister, and I literally hated her for years and years and years, and kind of withdrew inside when I was with her, but never disappeared. I always still paid some attention to her and hung around and tried once in a while a little bit, and when she was ready, she tried too, and we had to cross the religious divide. She's very conservative, and that was difficult for me, and she would try to convert me, and as an older sister, even though I'm now 65, but it was so, it's just so healing and so wonderful to have stuck it out, and finally, she and I looked each other in the eye, and And we just started speaking for real after, 50 years of enmity. And it's just the most rewarding, wonderful thing to now feel her love and to love her and join my other sister and my brother all together as a family. And we never really were, I had a violent alcoholic family, and that was difficult for all of us. And so it was tough to come together, but gosh, it's just so wonderful to be together now. I just wanted to share that.
No, I can hear the happiness in your voice, Clark, that you found this relationship. And I'm just curious, what was the incident or the event that instigated the repair after, years of kind of trying and fits and starts? What was the thing?
Let me share the incident. I mean, I can hold a resentment better than anybody I know, but I did let it go. When I was the rebel in the family. That was the role I took on. And my older sister took on the role of parent because my parents were pretty much absent. Mm-hmm. And so she disciplined me. And that's why I was so mad at her for all those years.
You never let that go. Yeah.
But the thing that happened was we had a family gathering. And we all live scattered now. We're all scattered all over the United States. But we all got together and I was just paying a little attention to her once in a while. And then everybody just left and we were just in the same room. And I had her husband is a minister, and he said something, and I argued with him, and we had a really difficult discussion, but he and I stuck it out, and I think she saw something there that I really respected him, even though I disagreed with him. And she just came into it, and then he left the room, and we just began to talk and look each other right in the eye, which I just have never done with my sister. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I just felt something. It's like, this really, she and I share a lot of history. And she just looked like a beautiful woman to me suddenly. And I loved her and I let her know.
That's beautiful.
I think saying I love you dearly was real big for her. And she just loosened up entirely. A few tears. And it was just so healing, I think, for both of us.
That's so beautiful, Clark, because I was going to address those later on, talking about how do we make those first steps forward. And one of the tips was to first come to our siblings, seeing them through their point of view. What is it that they're hoping for? And they're generally hoping for connection with you as well. And so if we can see them through, their needs and their wants and address them. I love you. I value you. Thank you for looking out for me when I was young and I didn't appreciate it. That can melt a lot of defenses.
Yes, yes. And I think she wanted her husband to be accepted in our family very, very, very much. And I think I broke through that one. And I tested him. He tested me. And we stuck it out, and it's really important for me to do that, to have a bad time with a friend as well as a good time, and see if anybody runs. And he didn't run, and I didn't run, and it was great for me and for him too. And he is my brother now.
But thank you.
I think my sister was wide open at that point. I think she felt really good about that. And then saying I love you, I think even though something in me said, I can't say that. I don't even mean it. But I just looked her in the eye and I just said, I love you, because I wanted to see what would happen. And what happened was love appeared. So that's cool.
It is. That is. Clark, thank you so much. I hope you've inspired a lot of people to stick it out, because I think that's part of my message today is I don't want us to run. Sometimes we need to turn around and face things and work our way through it, because if we can't repair those damaged relationships at home, it's going to be really hard to repair damaged relationships in other parts of the world. And, we have to be the piece that we want to see. So thank you for setting that off today.
Thank you.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. How is your relationship with your siblings? Do you have a favorite sibling story? How have they impacted your life? We'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. And Larry, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Sure.
Hi.
Number one, does the name Doan ring a bell with you?
He's my second cousin.
He's my longest time closest friend back in Princeton.
Okay, that's wild. How did we figure that out?
Actually, I've known about you being out here since I moved out here 30 years ago, but just haven't ever been home at the right time to say hello.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Siblings. I have two brothers roughly 12 years older than me, and a sister 4 years older, and I have to remind myself about them. No animosity, no hatred, just kind of meh. And I moved across the country, as I said, 30 years ago, and had no problem doing that. Part of it might be that both my older brothers went off to school about midway through high school. So just as I was really starting to become of age to kind of interact, they were gone anyway. But also in that particular time era, they were products of the 1950s, essentially, and I was definitely a 1960s, 1970s motorcycle hippie lifestyle stuff, so that kind of entered into it. So that's how I am with mine. It's kind of neutral. I was, however, in the bank one day, and I saw this, you know, nice, clean-cut Norman Rockwell young man standing in line at the bank. And on the back of his calves, I had to look at it closely, but he had a mostly black ink tattoo portrait of his mom and dad and a couple of siblings. And I looked at that. I thought, man, good for you to have that relationship. I totally can't relate to that. It's like we were from two different universes.
So, Larry, I'm wondering, though, is it something that you look for and would like to have? I mean, because you moved across country, and is it something that you feel like you want to work on? It sounds like you're...
Well, like I said, I've been out here 30 years. Only one has been out here, and that's because his kids moved out here after Uncle Larry. So I am close with them, but my family upbringing, you could say, was nobody ever got hit, but nobody got hugged, you know, either necessarily. And for me personally, I've always been very close with all of my dogs. So if I was to meet somebody that was raised by wolves, I could probably relate closer to them. And, you know, it's okay. I tend to be a pretty independent individual anyway, so there's my 2 cents.
I appreciate your 2 cents. Please tell my cousin Doan I said hello.
I will do that.
And I'm just going to throw it out there, just food for thought as you listen to this show today. There might be something to that, even your curiosity about siblings, that might be worth, you know, looking into, because the research really is strong in the mental health component and the physical health component and the spiritual health component, that connecting to those that we're most closely blood related to adds something. That even though the dogs are completely fulfilling, and I understand that, there is something to it. And I just hope maybe you'll take it on. And I hope you'll call again. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you, Larry. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. We're talking about siblings and sibling relationships, and what is your relationship like with your sibling? Do you have a great sibling story that you'd like to share? You know, it's a complicated thing, isn't it? Because some research shows that only half of siblings have a strong relationship with each other, and the other half feel contentious or still feel bitter or still carry anger. Is it worth going back in there and diving in and trying to repair things? My feeling is that absolutely yes. From a clinician standpoint, if trying to nurture and heal these relationships bring us a sense of peace and well-being, even if they don't become our daily confidant or friend, but at least that mending, that repair, think about the history that you share. And even if you spend your history as one of growing up in an alcoholic home or a home that wasn't really connected or close, you still share those stories together. You share that history. And having people whose history you share can really be profoundly impactful. And it's interesting because even the sibling research that shows that siblings can be super contentious going through their childhood, many siblings find their way back to each other in adulthood into their later years, and either through dealing with the death of a parent or the death of a sibling. So that's where we're going today. I hope that you'll call in. I hope that you'll share your thoughts, and I hope that you'll participate in the KCBX Spring Pledge Drive, which is just around the corner. You can help us out, help us reach our goal by renewing your financial support or becoming a new member today if you visit kcbx.org and click the donate button, or you can call us at 800-549-8855. You can help us get that pledge drive underway, and hang on. I'll be back in a moment to take your calls. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio. KCBX.
I am my mama's son, you are your father's child. Sometimes we act as if we hate each other. A different fate, a different state of mind. That don't mean we all can't be satisfied. We are all brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters.
We are all brothers and sisters.
Brothers and sisters.
Some are black and brown, others white and light. That's all the difference I can remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Different face, a different kind of smile. That's what you see, but this we must realize. We are all brothers and sisters.
You're my brothers and sisters.
We are all brothers and sisters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Earth is my mother, there is no other. So for you, so for all of us.
You're listening to A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875, and we're talking about brothers and sisters. And one of the pieces of research that was done followed young men, boys, as they were growing up. And what they found was that for boys, having a relationship with a sibling, specifically a sister, but actually any sibling, gives them a stronger sense of altruism and empathy and the ability to relate to others. That a sibling relationship teaches a young boy, a boy turning into a man, more about connection and affection than other relationships, more than their relationship with their parents and more than relationship with friends and peers. So I found that really fascinating, that for boys especially, in a culture that has a hard time nurturing the masculine, it has a hard time nurturing and raising up young men, that it's in those sibling relationships the young men find that altruism and care. And I started the show telling the story about my brother. He's a real athlete, you know, good-looking guy, lots of friends, kind of that typical middle child who was less connected to the family and more into his peer group relationships. And yet, when we were in college and I went through this tragic experience of losing my friends, he developed this whole side of himself. And again, we never really talked about it at the time, but this ability to empathize, sympathize, be caring and affectionate with me in a way that we'd never experienced growing up was life-changing for me, but I think also for him as well. So what do you think? 805-781-3875. Is it Marlena or Marlene?
This is Jeremy.
Oh, Jeremy, I'm sorry. I'm wrong call, but Jeremy, let's go with you. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Real quick, I'll say that I know everybody thinks they had the worst lot in their sibling order. I know I did.
Okay.
But that's not what I called to talk about. I am in the middle of three boys and was much closer with my older brother just due to being closer in age and having shared a bedroom all our lives. He died a few years ago, and I sought to develop a relationship with my younger brother. I needed that close sibling relationship. I started by apologizing to him for not having been a good big brother. I just didn't think that I'd been the brother I needed to be to him. Mm-hmm. And he very quickly said, "What are you talking about? You were a great big brother." And it floored me. It floored me. Then he brought up a few instances that I didn't think much of. I didn't think that was an example of being a good big brother, but they were seminal moments in his life. And so I just want to offer the perspective that your perspective on your relationship with your sibling is your perspective. And if, you know, if you're worried that it's bad, it might not be as bad as it seems. It, you know, your sibling's perspective may be different. So I was grateful to have apologized to him because I was grateful for his response. And we are now building a relationship as adults that we never had as kids. And
I'm so happy for you because it must have helped with the grieving of losing your other brother to come together.
Oh yeah. Well, yes and no. He won't talk about our older brother. Mm. So that's another subject, but that initial shock, that initial loss did bring us together. And I've worked hard since then to maintain that. So you might think that you're a bad sibling, but maybe your siblings think otherwise.
Well, and wouldn't it be great if we took the time to even have that conversation? You know, because we talk a lot about how do we break down those walls? How do we make that initial conversation happen? And as Clark mentioned, you know, it's sometimes we have to step over whatever we're feeling about the relationship and just go right in there to try to nurture what our sibling might need. You know, and your apology just opened that door. And for Clark, who was saying, I love you, even though he didn't really feel in the time, it opened the door for possibilities of love. And I think a lot of times when we're in conflict with people, we're so rooted in having our side heard. We want to make sure that we are, you know, treated right and things are fair, that it just keeps the block. But when we can let go of our own need to be right or have things be justified or have things be fair, if we can let that go and then just think about the love or the intention of wanting to be connected, it can open doors. And even though your brother doesn't talk about your older brother, the fact that you are connected is healing him.
I believe that. Thank you for saying so. And it's funny, we're still working on our sibling intimacy, I guess, because mm-hmm. we don't tell each other, I love you. We have our little thing we tell each other. We say, love you like a brother.
Yeah. And be patient with that because the growing of the relationship slowly and nurturing it is going to be the sweet thing down the road. You know, a lot of times we want this instant gratification. We want to have like a 1 hour drama that plays out and then everything's fixed. But in real life, it's years and years of building trust and building that space again. And it's all the more rich and real when we're patient.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for doing what you do, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Jeremy. I appreciate you calling in. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Marlene, are you there?
I am here.
I'm glad you're still here. Thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes. Well, first of all, I want to say you've answered and commented on a lot of things I was going to talk about. So thank you. But the point for me was the relationship with my brother, how it affected me. And in my marriage now, my husband's relationship with his sibling affects who he is, and which then is an interaction between the two of us. It gets complicated. But my relationship with my brother, who is older, started off very, very close when we were young, and then got bad when I started being more rebellious and not listening to him and not letting him sort of be the father figure. Mm-hmm. And then, after our parents died, I really needed to have him be in my life and be closer. And I was making a lot more effort. And we, through my sister-in-law, I think, we are starting to connect now better. And we're currently on a road trip down the coast from on the West Coast, Washington, down to the end of the nation, we call it, to this wonderful San Diego. And I stopped to visit him for just a few minutes. When my sister-in-law and my husband walked out in the other room, I got really nervous and scared to just be in the room with him because I've always felt criticized. And I just made the effort to ask him and talk to him about some things to do with his sailing he does. And there was just this somebody mentioned this eye connection.
Yes, that's what Clark said.
And it just felt warm and wonderful. And I walked out of his house feeling like something had happened. It was just terrific.
Something shifted. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hoping we can take the step. I'm 67, he's 69, to continue on. But, you know, I think it's so important before we die. I didn't get that relationship with my dad. I think death really, you know, brings that around to say, no matter what age we are, it's important.
It is. And, you know, it's never too late either, which you're recognizing at 67 or 69 or 77 or 80, mm-hmm. right? As long as we're breathing and we're here mm-hmm. on the planet, we can repair things that have gone astray. We can make that effort. And we might not always be successful, but if we can let down our guard, as I keep using that as my starting point, we have to let down our guard and be open so that our siblings can let down their guard, and then we'll see what happens. And it might not be that instant love connection, but as you noticed with your brother, something shifted, and now a door is opened, and you get to walk through and see where it takes you.
Yeah, I'm hoping. And on that same plane, if you could comment on my children now, my two sons, how I can build that for them.
Okay. I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to let you go, but I'll address it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate you listening on your road trip down south. Enjoy. All right, so let's talk briefly about how do we nurture that for our own children. And it's interesting, you know, sometimes our instinct as parents kind of go against what's in the best interest of our children. You know, part of our parenting job is to help our children launch out into the world and be independent and autonomous and to find their own way. And so we encourage a lot of that. But at the same time, it's important that we nurture and set a tone and a value system in the house that our children take with them when they grow. So that attitude we have as parents, here is our value system as a family. We value being together. We value talking things out. We value working through conflict. You know, the environment that you set up as your children grow up, you might not see it work. You know, when they're 10 years old, they might still bicker and fight and throw things at the table. They might, you know, battle all the way through their teen years. But if the consistent message in your home is our value is to work things out, and you model that as parents, that if you have arguments as a husband and wife or as spouses, if you have arguments and then you work them out, you know, not to have a rip-roaring battle in front of your kids, but if you have a disagreement and you work through that disagreement and your kids see you then continue on, you know, now you're making dinner together or things resolve, you're modeling conflict resolution. You're modeling how, hey, it's tough and complicated, but we stick with it. And then you have those expectations for your kids. Like, you can battle, you can be annoyed with each other, but then you also find things that you can come together on. You know, whether it's enjoying a movie together or whether it's, you know, working on a project. They don't have to love everything about each other all day long. Forcing children to be friends, forcing them to be together, forcing them to do same activities, forcing them to share everything is going to set up resentment and anger and frustration. But encouraging positive interaction, finding things that you can do together as a family, doing community service, building a project, you know, like creating something in the house, working on something. When you create opportunities that the family can come together around, you're not forcing the relationship, but you're setting that standard. And so then as they grow into adults, they may not be involved in each other's lives 24/7 when they're young. Actually, research shows that when siblings grow and leave the home and they get their jobs and they get married and have kids of their own, they tend to be a little more distant in those years that they're building their own families. But if that expectation was set when they were young, that we are a family, we come together, we show up. One of the Weisenborn mottos is we show up, and we do. If you live out that family motto, as everyone ages and you're seen, you know, in your 50s and 60s, you come back to each other. You come back to that space. I hope that helped a little. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. 805-781-3875 is our number. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And Cindy, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, gosh, I have more than we can handle in this time slot, but I'll give you the
Give me a highlight.
I have a very tragic, sad relationship with my brother, who I looked up to dearly for years and years and years. We were very different. He was the smart one, but the bottom line is I have a brother who took advantage of our mother after our father passed away. He really betrayed my father. He was to care for her, and he got into some financial situations with a couple businesses he was trying to do, ended up using my mother as his credit line. He completely wiped her out. He has never apologized. He has never taken responsibility. I really haven't had any conversation with him at length in probably about 5 years. And it torments me because one day I'm going to get that call that he's not here anymore. Mm-hmm. He will go before me, I'm quite certain, will have never been resolved. But at the same time, I'm dealing with a person that I believe to be a fairly well textbook sociopath, mm-hmm. or at least sociopathic mm-hmm. in his behavior. And the stories that I could tell just go on, and they're astounding. I always win the worst brother story contest. My parents educated him. They put him through college, and he turned around and charged my mother $10,000 to handle my father's estate after he died. He was the executor.
But Cindy, and let me jump in here real quick.
Please.
So I guess my question for you is this. Given that you can't change your brother, right? Given that you can't change who he is or fix what has happened or change kind of the course of your family history, what is it you think you would need to feel okay in his passing? What would need to happen for you to feel okay now before he dies?
In his passing, I think about that, and I feel sometimes that I've already grieved his passing. Mm-hmm. Like the person I knew, she's died already, and now I've got this other person who I've seen twice at funerals, family funerals. He looked very devastated and, you know, not right the last time I saw him. And he actually looked sad. For the first time, he actually looked like, is there going to be remorse that could come out of his mouth? And I don't think it's ever really going to be there. I really, really don't. I've had other relatives say he doesn't understand what he did.
But I still, my question is to you, though, because you're still focused on him and what he needs to do to change. My question is for you to be at peace if you've already grieved and you've let him go, but it still bothers you because I can hear it in your voice, and there's a lot of stories that you still feel like you need to tell. What is it that would need to happen for you to feel at peace, given that we can't change him?
Yes. So nothing will change him. I will never hear, I'm sorry, right. I messed up.
So what would you need to be okay?
I don't know. I guess I don't know that. I guess that's what I struggle with. Is where is the peace in this?
So here's something you might try. Write him a letter about all these things that you're feeling. You don't have to mail it. You never have to mail it. You don't maybe want to open that door in any way. But write it down. Write it to him. I can't remember what his name is, but dear brother. And write everything out and give it a place and give it a voice and give it a place to be in your life. Put it aside. 6 months later, open it, read it again, see how it impacts you. Put it aside, maybe open it again a month or so later. At some point, you may be able to read that letter and you'll feel like, you know what, that's just the story of my life, but it doesn't tell the whole story of my life. But I think now that it lives inside of you, it just continues to replay and replay and replay. It's like your psyche's trying to fix this problem that can't really be fixed. And so I really encourage you to use a little of that narrative therapy is what we call it. Narrative therapy is, you know, writing down your story as it is. And then if you really feel like it, you can rewrite that story in a different way that's more powerful. But just the first step, and it could take you days and days and days to write a letter to him telling all of your feelings and then put it aside and see if that at least opens a door to some sort of healing. And I appreciate your call because, as I said earlier, 50% of relationships with siblings are challenging. They aren't strong, that people are suffering and struggling to try to make amends or to not make amends or to stay away from toxic relationships. And people on the other side have great relationships, and we're not really sure what makes them great, except that somehow they just work. And then between those two poles, one of relationships that just work really easily and one with relationships that never, never worked, is kind of that middle ground where we struggle and we keep trying and we keep reaching out and we hope for the best. We come to our relationships with the best of intentions and open our heart and see what happens. And that's life. It's messy. And it's siblings in progress. 805-781-3875. Hi, Greg. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey there. I was chuckling when you were talking about your impromptu family get-together, because we actually just had one of those a couple of weeks ago. I recently moved back to Santa Barbara, where I grew up, and my brother from the East Coast didn't tell anybody. He just showed up with his family. So then my other brother came down from Fresno. We started telling stories around the dinner table, and it was hilarious because half of them my parents have never heard. But I thought I'd just share a couple of fun brother stories.
Please do.
I have two brothers. I'm the eldest.
Okay.
So the first one was I was doing an internship at La Cumbre Plaza, and my brothers decided they wanted to meet me for lunch. They were home from college, and we go to lunch down at the plaza, and I had to go get a gift for somebody. So we're walking through Ben Robinson's, and my brothers went around. They told every person in the store that I was on a day furlough program from Camarillo State Hospital and that I was perfectly harmless if nobody touched my briefcase. So I'm walking through the store. Hilarious. People are looking at me funny, and I'm picking up on this. Finally, one of the staff came up and said, "Do you know what your brothers are telling everybody in the store?" So that was quite humorous.
At least they caught on and warned you.
Well, yeah, but it was like 20 minutes I'm walking around the store with people looking at me. Oh, it's funnier than heck. The other one I was going to say was my brothers then started piling on Greg's story. So I ended up asking my parents. I said, "Hey, do you remember Brian's friend, Eddie?" My mom says, "Oh, yeah, he was a lovely boy." I said, "Eddie Miller." She said, "Yes, yes." I said, what did he look like?" And my mom said, "Well, you know, that was so long ago, because we're all in our late 50s, early 60s. And I said, "Mom, you never met Eddie." She goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "Eddie was code word for me to go pick up beer and meet them at the pier so they could smoke cigars and drink beer." My mother was like, "Not my Brian." That was hilarious.
So she thought this person is like your version of Eddie Haskell, but he didn't exist.
Right. Yeah. No, he didn't exist. Eddie Miller was go buy us a 12-pack of Miller beer. I mean, it's down at the pier because they were underaged. So it was funnier than heck. And I said, "Now, do you want to continue telling stories? Because I got more where that came from." My brother's like, "Yeah, no, truth.
And it's funny that you bring that up, because when we have our family storytelling sessions, we start to out each other a little bit more about things that we did, but we never told our parents. And the older we get, the more doors we open. Yeah, because there's enough distance between that. But there's something about that shared history with siblings. And I also love the piece of research that says your siblings are the only ones that get how weird your parents were. And that's, and I don't think we think about that enough, that all of, I won't say all, but many people feel that they grew up with the weirdest parents of all time, or that no one would believe what went on in my house if they actually knew what was going on. But your siblings were there and shared the history with you. And so you got to keep those relationships strong, because no one else would believe what it was like growing up at home with your folks.
I'll leave you with one last story.
Okay.
Coming home, we got married in Santa Barbara. My wife literally had her mom, and that was it. So we got married down in Santa Barbara. We drive into the driveway. My brother comes out, my youngest brother, into the driveway. He's got a white leisure suit on. I don't know where he found this. He says, "Welcome to Picker Island. I will forewarn you. Do not go inside yet. Mom and Dad are having a discussion." To talk to thinking about your parents as being different.
Yes, and how only you as siblings would get it. I appreciate you calling in, Greg. I like the levity, because I think that a lot of us have a lot of family history that we would love to revisit with our siblings if we were able to let go some of the resentment that we carry coming out of our youth. So let me leave you with a couple thoughts. Every sibling feels that they got the raw deal. You can talk to any sibling, no matter if they're the oldest, youngest, middle, they feel like that they got the raw deal with mom and dad, and that nobody got them, and that someone else was the favorite. That we can't fix the difficult people in our lives. So we can't fix our difficult siblings. You'll ultimately just be disappointed if you rush situation and continually try to lift them up or give them money or fix them or improve their life or tell them what to do or tell them how to live, you're just going to end up disappointed, frustrated, and angry. If a sibling comes to you for help and you make a plan together, that's one thing. But if we feel compelled to always rush in and try to fix those siblings we think are struggling, it's going to end up causing more frustration and more breaks. When we are together, it's important to come to those relationships with this feeling of good intent. And look at your siblings and see them through the eyes of wanting good things for you. If we go into that relationship holding on to old resentments, thinking about how we feel like we were ripped off, remembering something that was terrible that they did to us when we were young, it's really hard to open those doors. And I don't know about you, but there are a lot of things I did when I was young that I certainly am not proud of today. And if my brother decided to hold against me all of the stitches and scars on his body for times that I wounded him when we were young, we would never be as close as we are today. So I encourage you to take a second look at those sibling relationships. They are your longest, strongest blood relationships. They are your history. And I don't expect that everyone will heal them, but if more of you step forward and tried, I think there'd be a lot more happy endings, or happy endings to these stories. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Please join us on our Facebook page. Follow me on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. Listen to our previous shows at kcbx.org. Send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And if you can, podcast our shows and leave a review. It's always helpful to spread the word for our community. And thank you for being a part of this conversation. And thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. And thank you to my siblings for being my BFs. Happy birthday, Katie. I love you all.
The road is long with a man.